Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome to Advices Radio. This is episode number 2. Advices is presented by Naps Gear. I'm your host, Scott. And with me tonight, I have a very special treat, my good buddy, Bill. Say what's up, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, guys? What's up, Scott?
I'm good, man. How you doing tonight? What's going on?
Good. Oh, nothing. Just relaxing a little bit and try not to think too hard about my last meal here. I'm getting hungry, but that's to be expected. I'm 5 weeks out from my show. I actually am doing the Junior USAs.
So you've been dieting now. How long out was it, like, officially your diet?
Well, actually, we started at 16. Last year, we started around 20 or 21, but my coach, Shelby Starnes, and good friend, I kept sending him pics and kept holding me off till 16 because I stayed in a better condition this off season. So
nice.
Yeah. So it's been, getting down to the end here.
And that's
just kind of getting hard now, actually.
Yeah. You're starting to feel it wear on you a little bit.
Energy wise. But, I kind of know what to expect. I went through it last year with him. So definitely when you know what's coming around the corner, it's a little easier to take. So.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. There's no question about that. Yeah, I'd have to say that the first contest I ever did was the hardest in a lot of ways because I wasn't ready for, like, what was coming next, you know?
Yeah, right.
But, hey, listen, so that kind of brings up the topic of choice tonight, which you had thought about and brought to me. And what we're going to discuss is the importance of staying consistent in your off season. And this is something that I think a lot of people lack because it's so easy, you know, after the stage lights go down and after that initial excitement wears off post contest, it's easy to kind of like lose the fire and not have, you know, that focus because that contest isn't coming right up. That contest, you know, the days are moving just as fast, but it doesn't feel that way when you're, you know, 1 year out. So this year I've seen your pictures. You made some really good progress. I mean, you pretty much, and I watched you too, you know, for the listening audience, Bill is also a training partner of mine, and I've watched you progress, Bill. You basically stepped off stage, got right back to work, stayed consistent, and you made some really awesome progress too in that.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Overall, you're bigger just everywhere. You know, I think everything improved.
Yeah, I'm right now. I keep checking notes from last year pretty much, you know, every 3-4 days, checking the weights where I was at 5 weeks out. And I'm around 7.5 pounds heavier right now.
Well, wow.
Basically the same condition. So
nice.
Yeah. Which Shelby said, if I stay around that 7 pound mark, visually, it should look 10 to 12 pounds heavier on stage.
Oh, I could imagine that.
So I'm pretty excited for that, for sure.
No kidding. So you said your strength is kind of starting to, is it strength is going down or just in general you're feeling the burn?
Well, you know, I'll tell you at first, probably like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I noticed my strength, you know, gradually coming down a little bit, but now it's kind of leveled off.
Okay.
And it's more tiredness and it's really actually more on my off days because when I train, I'm training earlier than I did last year. Last year I trained around 6 at night. So I would be working all day.
Yeah.
I would take my pre-workout between 5 and 5:30. So I had that energy then, but before then it was like I was definitely, you know, feeling it, the tiredness. So now that I'm training earlier in the day, because I'm training now full-time with Shelby. Last year it was only on leg days or days I had off from work, like holidays.
Right, right.
So I was his main leg day training partner last year. But this year, since I'm training with him, you know, all the workouts, and then on Wednesday, me and you and Shelby train. I'm taking the pre-workout earlier in the day, so that's kind of helping me get through most of the day. So I haven't really resorted to any extra caffeine until actually late last week. I really started to feel it where I needed a little bit of a boost later on, even after I trained.
Okay.
Even when I had taken the pre-workout. So, you know, which I kind of expected that, but it's – I think – last year it was it's the tiredness probably started a little bit more it probably got harder earlier on just because I was taking the pre-workout later in the day.
That makes
so
sense.
That definitely seemed to help this year training earlier. So
yeah, that makes sense. So yeah. Have you ever experimented with L-tyrosine at all?
You know what, actually I did take some last year and it did help.
Okay.
Yeah, it did help. And this year I haven't taken any yet, but I do have some, and I think I am going to start taking it probably this week again.
Right on. Yeah, you know, that's something that I was unfamiliar with in the past. And speaking of Shelby, he had mentioned it to me last year.
Yeah.
I'd given it a try. I just picked some of the powder up from True Nutrition, mm-hmm. and I started with 500 milligrams, you know, taken mid-afternoon, and that's usually – about the time that I would start to feel, you know, like a crash almost, you know, right. And it did seem to help. And for the listening audience, what L-tyrosine is going to do, and this is kind of like my bro science version of an explanation, it's not directly going to act as a stimulant, but it will help to fight fatigue, and it will help to perpetuate the stimulants that you are taking so that you'll get a better effect out of them. You know, you'll see it in a lot of the like 5-hour energy drink type things. And I think you see it in the 5-hour energy, that's an energy shot, but I think you also see it in like the energy drinks and stuff mm-hmm. too.
Yes, you do. There's a lot of them in there. I think it helped me a little bit also with focus as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Which was nice. So I'll probably start introducing that here shortly again too.
I've heard that they use it in the military for that purpose, to fight fatigue.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah, I would consider it, instead of a stimulant, more of like a anti-fatigue agent, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. It's not real. It's not going to get you like real raced up like, you know, tons of caffeine. But now it seems like when I add a little bit extra caffeine, it doesn't really make me too jittery or anything like that. It kind of just brings me almost back to like normal.
Yeah. So
that's, I can get away with probably taking more right now than I would in the off season, which in the off season, the only caffeine I really get is just a cup or two of coffee, if that, in the morning, and then my pre-workout. But
okay.
With all the extra food, I really don't need it too much.
Sure. No, that makes total sense.
And then I try to kind of lay off it anyways, just so when I really need it pre-contest, I know it's going to work.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, pre-contest versus off season, and you know, these things, this stuff. I mean, we're talking about competitive bodybuilding. I know that a lot of our listeners are not necessarily competitors. Thing is that the same stuff applies, you know, whether you're competing or not. It doesn't make somebody a better bodybuilder. There's tons of guys out there that look totally awesome and could potentially do really good at a bodybuilding contest if they desired to do one, but it's not their goal, you know. So
right.
Nonetheless, you know, these things we're talking about tonight, this stuff still applies to everybody else who is, you know, trying to grow. And a lot of times, I think for your average gym bro, you know, it's winter time. That's your bulking season, you know?
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
they get shredded up for summer to look their best when, you know, you head to the beach or whatever.
Yep.
When the shirts come off. So
right. I mean, you see a lot of that in the gyms. They're real crowded and, you know, people are... You know, it's obviously really crowded after New Year's because everybody with their New Year's resolutions. But then, you know, as it gets towards spring, then it starts getting crowded again because people think, oh, man, I got to, you know, summer's around the corner and I better get in here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I definitely think that's true. A lot of the bulking goes on in the winter and then, you know, obviously they want to get in shape for summer. So, yeah.
You know, and just to step this back a little bit further, a question that I get asked a lot, or really not even a question, but, you know, when I get somebody who wants to work with me, they want to be a client for my coaching service, the first thing that I ask them in my questionnaire is about their goals. And what I often get from guys that are newer is they say, I want to get shredded and I want to get as big as possible. Now, they don't understand. And that's something we should talk about here. You know, you got to prioritize because you're either going to eat enough calories to get bigger, or you're going to create enough of a calorie deficit that you could lose the fat. So they're two separate goals. And although to an extent you can grow while you're getting leaner, especially for somebody who's earlier in their career as a bodybuilder, right. You come to a point where you got to pick a goal and you focus on it. So, you know, let's take that winter time, that off season, the time when nobody's going to see your six pack and you can get as fat as you want and eat extra donuts. I mean, the temptation is there. So the question of the night is how do you maintain your focus and consistency in the off season, Bill?
Yeah, I think that's really good what you brought up. You really have to. You know, if someone says they want to be huge and shredded at the same time, and you said you have to basically prioritize it, that's very, very true. Because unless you're like, you know, like you said, very new into bodybuilding and you're like just, you know, super young and you're still growing, you got to at least have enough nutrients and calories to induce that growth. You know, you can't just be super, super lean all the time and expect to put on the maximum amount of muscle you could, you know?
Sure, so, sure.
I think it's funny, too, that you bring that up, because right after my last show last year, which was the Michigan, was on a Saturday. On the next day, Sunday, I went to Shelby's house, and we were talking about what we were going to do next and formulate something. So that was like the next day after coming off, you know, like 21 weeks of, you know, real intense dieting, you know. So and he had given me some goals as far as what he wanted my weight to be before we started dieting, you know, nice. The next time. And when he threw out the number like 230, I was like, oh, man, I was thinking to myself almost for a minute, because I was in such, you know, good condition.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, I want to stay lean, but man, I got to get up to 230. So basically, you know, I realized that that you have to actually stick to the plan, meaning that I knew I had to, you know, bring my calories up slowly and have a concerted effort to make sure my weight was at a certain point by a certain time. So by the first of the year, which was January, he wanted my weight to be up to 230. And I think I got up to like 228. So,
okay. And what was your contest, your stage weight?
Well, last year my stage weight was 188. And, I think that what we did is Shelby decided to err on the side of caution a little bit, and we never worked together. So we actually only did a 2-day carb up.
Okay.
He wanted me to come in real extra dry. So now knowing my body, I think we might try something just a tad bit different this time and do a 3-day carb up.
Really? And just take it a little bit slower then?
Yeah. And just become a little bit fuller.
Okay.
Because, you know, he thinks that my condition is going to be, you know, just as good as it was last year, but just coming fuller. So that's kind of like the,
you know, the goal here. I don't know if we're going to have any type of space on the website where we can put up pictures, but if we do, we got to put up a shot of your glutes, because they were freaking peeled, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. That was all Shelby. I never had that before
until
he got a hold of me now.
Wow.
No, so that was exciting to see that come in for sure. I was real excited.
Do you ever do any kind of like body fat testing?
No, I can't say I never did, because I actually did. God, this is I'm going back probably 20 years or 25 years. I did one at this club in Las Vegas where they actually hooked electrodes up to you.
Oh, wow.
Like your ankles, and then I think on your wrists, and they did these measurements through electrical current where they could test what was water, what was fat.
Electric impedance, I believe it's called.
Yeah, and but not anything like with the hydrostatic weighing, where you get into the water or anything like that.
Right, right.
Okay. And not like anything recent. So I just kind of like feel that it doesn't really matter to me what my body fat level is, because I'm just going off how I look. And I think the judges, obviously, they don't care either. They're going by visual, too. So
absolutely.
Yeah, just one less thing I have to worry about. you know?
Yeah. I'm the same way. And, you know, for me, I'm never going to be the biggest guy on stage, but there's a chance that I could be the most conditioned, you know, on the right day.
Right.
And if I worked hard enough to get there, I've never done my body fat either. Yeah, I've done the thing, like you said, like the electric impedance test, where they've got one at my current gym where you take your shoes off and you stand on a metal plate and then you hold these handles and you know, it runs currents through your body. But I don't know how accurate those are.
I don't know either.
I mean, from what I understand, the machine, as long as you're equally as hydrated, the machine will be fairly accurate to itself. But once you get down into the body fat levels that we're at, you know, for competition, it's too precise of a number for them to really evaluate, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, I know that at my last contest, this was about a year ago now, I came in 4 weeks out, fairly bloated up, I would say, because I was still eating some carbs. And it was in like the afternoon. I guess you're supposed to be like fairly hydrated, but you want to do it first thing in the morning. I had just eaten, so I guess that throws it off too. And at 4 weeks out, it said that I was like, I think 3.something% body fat.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I know it got lower, you know, from there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've always wondered. I'd love to know, you know, what was that exact number?
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity. But yeah, nonetheless, man, I mean, you were definitely down there. And like you said, the judges don't care. It's all about how it translates visually, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that was another thing we had talked about, me going in these junior shows, which are usually for like the younger guys and not like the Masters Nationals yet. So he goes, that doesn't matter because no one's going to know what your age is really anyways.
This is true.
So yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's almost like, you know, what's your body fat percentage? You could just lie, or just like when someone says, how much do you bench, you could just tell them 600 even though you can't. so, you know
just for the listening audience, how old are you, Bill?
I just turned 47 about a month ago.
That's crazy, because you're in better shape than I would say just about everybody at the gym. And, you know, you're definitely working harder than just about everybody I know, too. So.
Oh, thanks.
But yeah, I'm getting off topic here. So you and Shelby had a sit down and you set some goals. And then from there, tell me a little bit more. What was the next step?
Well, you know, the next step was actually just really slowly kind of I guess if you want to use a popular term, I guess reverse dieting out of the show, basically cut my cardio in half and then just adding probably like 20 or 30 grams of carbs to each meal. Cause I'm basically at, you know, that point for the last 5 weeks or so, I'm at zero carbs, pretty much every day, except, one cheat meal on Sunday night, last meal of the night, to basically just, you know, kind of jumpstart your thyroid and stuff. So,
right.
Which at that point, that's basically what it's doing. It's not really, you know, making you too full, and it's not really making you feel all that great because you're so depleted. So you figure it's going to make you feel better, but it really doesn't, because the next day you're doing your fasted cardio the next morning and you're already flattened out again. You know, you need to have those carbs for a few days in order for it to do anything, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's real important to set goals. Obviously, to stay consistent in the off season. Now, like you said, you don't have to be a competitor.
Right.
You could have a goal as simple as that you wanted to get in shape for, let's say, for instance, if it was a female or a male, if they were getting married and they wanted to just drop a few pounds, at least they have that. It's always good to have a fixed date, I think, as a goal. So then you kind of have your time frame set and you can always look to that end date. So I think, you know, if you have a wedding coming up, if you're not a competitor, or if you just like – want to look good for the beach. That could be another goal.
Sure, a vacation.
Or, yeah, a vacation, a family reunion, or a high school reunion or something like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a competition, but it kind of is a competition.
Yeah.
When you put like a date on it and you're kind of in competition with yourself. Having a goal, definitely in the off season, it can be a long time. It could be a year.
Yeah.
Almost. And you definitely have to set some kind of goal. And like I said, to have some kind of end date in mind that you can physically look at, okay, it's going to be May 21st or June 10th or something like that, really, I think, helps you in your mind, because to have that date, then you know you can't – there's no really time to waste. But as we all know, we see people who compete every year, and screw around in the off season, and then once it comes time for the pre-contest to start, whether it be 20 weeks, 16 weeks, or 12 weeks, and then they say, okay, it's really time now to start kicking ass.
Sure.
But by that time, it's too late because you're not really in the mode of really building muscle pre-contest. Your whole goal and your whole scope of everything should be to get as lean as possible.
So it shouldn't be.
Yeah, you shouldn't really be worried about putting muscle on pre-contest. So
yeah.
I think if you start getting all riled up and say, I want to kick some ass now that it's pre-contest, you've already missed your window completely.
Yeah, at this point, you basically can at best hope for being as big as you were last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not going to be any more changes. So I totally agree there. And yeah, it's something that I think a lot of people fall into. I mean, I myself have fallen into it. For me, getting into lean contest shape is naturally a lot easier than it is for me to grow. So that's my toughest part is, you know, maintaining the off season. And I have better at some seasons than others. But, you know, no matter what I do, you know, it's always got to be focused around eating. I know there's a lot of guys, you know, the ectomorphs out there that just don't understand how much food you got to put in. But let's say, you know, I know a lot of our guys that are listening are, you know, newer to bodybuilding. What would you consider to be a good time frame for an off season?
I would say definitely I really like to say at least on the low end, I'd like to say 7 months.
Really? That's pretty long. Yeah.
Yeah. I really would like to see that. And then, you know, depending on your condition, your body type and your metabolism and everything, obviously you're going to need a longer or a shorter pre-contest phase, but at least give yourself a good 7, maybe even 8 months of really being consistent. Now, you know, there's things that you can obviously do. Like we talked about setting goals, for the off season, as far as like, you know, getting some kind of date in mind, that's really going to help you. But really what, you know, it can come down to as simple as, you know, making a good training split for your body that you can, you know, that's not going to get too boring. Let's say, for instance, you've been doing the same split for a long time and you feel that, you know, you might need a change. It might take something really small like that to spur you on for the next 3 or 4 months to kind of give you a new energy. So you might want to think about maybe changing your training split and then also making it conducive for you to have enough recovery, because a lot of people get burned out when they train 6-7 days a week, but they continue to do it because they think they need that.
Sure.
But they've never tried to back off. I mean, a couple years ago, 3 years ago, I was training 5 days a week. And when I went to 4 to try it, and I grew a lot better.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, I was always fresh when I came in the gym. And I really looked forward to that next workout because it's like, oh man, you were so anxious and just ready to get in the gym and kill it again because you had less anxiety built up and just stress from being like, oh, I got to go to the gym again today. You know, if you were training, say, 7 days a week. So
sure.
It's just small little changes like that can just, you know, spur you on for a couple months at a time. And before you know it, you've been really consistent, at least on the training end, not to mention, you know, nutrition is a whole nother aspect, which I think is, you know, even more important than the training, obviously, during the off season. But if you can make small changes, it can really spur you on to propel you a few months into it. So I think just by making little changes, it can really help a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we're kind of getting closer to the end here of our time. What are there any other suggestions that you would have for somebody that's looking to do an off season?
Yes. Another one is that, let's say, for instance, you're thinking about a training partner, and or if you don't have one, that's something that could be conducive to a good off season. Now, there's positives and negatives. You might be better off not having a training partner.
Interesting. Yeah.
You might be better off. And, you know, there obviously some of the negatives to that would be if you wanted to do forced reps and some different intensity techniques that took a training partner. But you can always figure out other ways, obviously, to accomplish the same things without a training partner as far as drop sets and whatnot and supersets. So when I say maybe for you, it might not be good for someone to have a training partner, because that person actually might be showing up late. Mm. They might be missing workouts. They might not be, you know, have the same strengths and weaknesses, and they might not want to work on the same stuff that you do. So for some people, that might be a plus to get rid of one now, or just to, you know, obviously to keep training alone, it might be better for them. And then for other people, it might be better to get a training partner to push you to that next level. Maybe hopefully someone that's more knowledgeable than you, that's stronger on your weak body parts and whatnot. So that's something that someone could think about too, is either not having a training partner to propel them or getting a training partner.
I like those. That's something I hadn't thought of. That's classic.
And then also I think thirdly, you gotta really love being in the gym and this whole lifestyle in order to make, I think, to be consistent in the off season, because if you don't really love it, it can be a long part of the year. So I think really it comes down to just the love of it.
That's a great point. You know, there's so much instant gratification involved with the contest diet, you know, or I won't even call it that. I'll call it the cutting diet. You know, you can you see people constantly, you know, on social media, they're posting their pictures every week. And the reason they're posting them is because they're seeing these little changes, and those changes happen a lot faster when you start cutting the food out and you start doing the right cardio, you know. So all that comes together, and it gets real addictive. It can be hard to kind of, I feel like with the off season, you almost have to slow things down, and kind of what we've been alluding to, you got to kind of start looking at the bigger picture, don't you?
Oh, you definitely do. Because I mean, you know, there was many times that I was like, man, you know, it's like I barely fit into any of my clothes. I had a lot of issues with my lower back hurting because of the extra weight, and then I would get these back pumps and whatnot. Oh, but I always would stop and think, oh, yeah, that this is part of it. I have to get through A, B, and C to get to D, and D is being, you know, on stage, peeled, in the best condition of my life, and being heavier. So, you know, if I could go from A to D,
yeah,
without doing anything, yeah, it would be great. But I knew that I had to do those steps in order to get to the end part of it. So if you realize that, then it becomes a little easier that you're going through all that stuff. So all the times that I was in a lot of pain, especially it seemed to really come out on me more so on leg day, the back problems I had.
Okay.
But, you know, in the back of my head, I just knew that this was just one segment I had to get through in order to get to my goal. So if it's that important to you, and you can just put that in the forefront of your mind anytime you have pain or adversity, thinking about, like you said, that end game, then, you know, it makes it definitely tolerable and more enjoyable.
That makes total sense. So listen, I'm glad that we could have you, Bill. I'm going to go ahead and cut to a little break here. And when I come back, would you like to stay with me and answer a few questions?
I sure would.
All right, awesome. I've got a couple more frequently asked questions, things like that we covered last week. We've got one about growth hormone. We've got one about cutting compounds. And we're going to talk about bringing up lagging body parts. So thanks for being with me, Bill. And guys, we will be right back. Back Advices Radio. I am with Bill. Still, he's here with me. We're about to answer some questions, but interestingly, you know, I didn't mention in the first segment, besides being a competitive bodybuilder, Bill is also a diet coach. And funny enough, while we took the break, both of us had gotten texts from clients of ours. And we're both just discussing, you know, what we are going to do in these situations. And I said, hey, this is a Q&A segment. Why don't we just bring these questions to the show? So, Bill, just hang with me here, and let's start this up. So, interestingly, I've got a client who he's been natural. Yeah, I shouldn't say natural because he's used, you know, pro hormones. He's experimented with you know, some of the newer stuff. So, you know, some of the things that are no longer available, like Halodrol, Superdrol, stuff like that. I think he's got some chosen one at home. And, you know, he's worked with me two times now. He's on his third go. We're about to start things up. And he comes to me with this dilemma. He says he's got testosterone, okay? And we're going to use this test now. This is all his idea. We're going to run testosterone for this. And it's going to be his first actual cycle, okay? And he's never done it before. So I hit the stop button here on our recording, and I look at my phone while I go to take the break, and he says, I'm trying to pull the text up here. He says, I'm not going to lie. I'm having anxiety about doing this first injection. And I had suggested to him that he used a glute shot. And he says, do you think that I can do it in my delt? I have 1-inch 23 gauge. Okay, so 1-inch 23 gauge, I mean, that's okay. You could do a delt shot with that. No reason you can't do a glute shot with it. But I probed a little deeper, and he's just experiencing anxiety overall. He said that, like he said, it's hard to explain. You know, he's not somebody who's like a big drinker or a drug user, and he feels like he's doing something wrong. You know, this is the kind of thing, like, I get a lot of people who are new to anabolics that run into this, just issues in general with the idea of injecting. Have you ever come across that, Bill?
Yeah, I actually, not so much with clients, but more so people I know that have gone on HRT, and they actually don't want to administer that themselves. They rather have a friend do it, which they'd have to track that person down once a week or whenever their application each, which seems to me a little bit crazy to have to be relying on someone to give your to actually give you your medication, which you're prescribed, which you most certainly need. I mean, there's obviously, you know, they're on it for a reason, for health reasons. So that just seems to me just nuts.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but certain people just have phobias. There's a stigma around the idea of using an injection, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's getting a little, obviously a little bit more acceptable with all the different longevity clinics and HRT clinics, and
sure,
people really knowing more about hormones and how they're related to health. But I still think, you know, there's that stigma, and that's, you know, that obviously takes years and years to wear off society.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have an answer for this guy. I don't want to tell a client that he has to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's going to be up to him. But I did remind him. I dropped him a quick text here to say that, and I'm gonna quote myself here. I said, injections are a common method of administering medication. This method of medication administration has been used for hundreds of years and is done thousands of times a day, if not more, for what it's worth. So I'm going to leave it up to him at the end of the day. If he decides that he doesn't want to use it, then, you know, that's fine. I could still help him. You know, realistically, you don't have to use gear in order to get in great shape. You know, it doesn't have to be. But at the same time, you know, it is going to supplement your program. And yeah, you can take yourself, in my opinion and in my experience, a lot further. So, Bill, you had a question too, huh?
Yeah, I actually had a question from a female client. A lot of females tend to hold on to a lot of their body fat in their lower body. She was concerned that she was 9 weeks out from her competition and her upper body was getting really hard, but she was still struggling a little bit in her lower body. And I reminded her that we were basically in the same spot last year.
Yeah.
I told her, you know, in one more week we'll be introducing Proviron, which will help lower her estrogen. And a lot of times you have with females with that higher estrogen levels, they tend to store fat in their lower bodies. And she was basically going, oh, that's right, I'm kind of in a brain fog from the lower carbs. So she, it kind of set her mind at ease a little bit. But that often happens with females from, you know, basically having those estrogenic effects tend to store body in their glutes and hamstrings. And, sure. and some of them more too, actually in the quads as well.
Sure.
So that definitely helps. That compound helps, as well as, I believe, you know, Novadex. I just prefer using Proviron with some of the females. It works really well.
Interesting. Now, I've never used Proviron before for a female. I mean, it's basically oral DHT.
Yes. You know? Yes, it is a DHT derivative. Yes. So I think that obviously if you overdo it and you do it for a long period of time, there could be obviously some side effects. So you want to watch the length. I mean, 6 weeks, I think, is usually good.
Okay.
And I think the dosing for a female would probably good about 25, so half that of a male.
Okay. And that's, you know, also, too, what division is she in?
She's actually in physique, so.
So she's a bigger girl, then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a bigger girl, for sure.
So this isn't something, I mean, if you had, I come in contact with a lot of guys who say, you know, my wife wants to get into shape, what should she use? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that Proviron would probably not be your first choice for your average housewife that wants to look better.
No, I think the first choice is definitely diet.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And then if they want to move to supplements, then, you know, from there, if they wanted to move into supplementation, then maybe add a fat burner, like maybe some Clen would be my suggestion.
Yeah, even if it was just a housewife, I wouldn't even suggest that. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm maybe a little bit more liberal then. I don't see Clen as being a problem, but, you know, I mean, do you need it? No, probably not. I mean, I guess it depends on how far they want to take it. And I will find that, you know, using a fat burner is going to speed things up. But as far as like steps go, I would consider Clen to be step number one. And then step number two would probably be like Novadex. Yep. And that maybe for a figure girl. You know, once again, that's not something I would suggest for like your average housewife or non-competitor woman who just wants to look better in the gym. But there are women out there that are just like the men that want to, you know, they want to add performance enhancing drugs into their program. And I guess the number one thing I would say is, you know, weigh it out, do as much research as you can on these things and recognize that there can be long-term side effects, you know, and these side effects can be different for females than they are for males.
Oh, yes. Yep. I agree with that.
But when we're talking about somebody like your client, this woman who's, she's pretty much, she's going to be bigger than probably, you know, most of your average male gym goers.
Oh, yeah. That actually with this, in this case, it's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could see maybe a little bit of Proviron in her case. Yeah, but definitely. And, you know, while we're on the topic of questions, Bill and I have put together a set of questions here that once again, we've got the website is going up. And once it's up, we are going to have a Q&A section where you guys can submit all the questions you have. And we'll go ahead and discuss them and hopefully give you some ideas and some answers. Until that time, we've got a bunch of frequently asked ones. And so for the first one tonight, we are going to discuss what's the best cutting drug. Go ahead and take it away, Bill.
Okay. Well, actually, my thoughts on this topic might be a little different, but I think that in a lot of cases that I've seen and I've heard very conflicting things about this whole subject. One of them is a lot of people go, "Wow, you know, when I heard that when you take this stuff called that Tren, that you just, man, you get abs and your body fat melts off." And in my personal opinion, I've never seen that to be the case. In my opinion, it's you know, all diet. I've never really seen a drug that just, you know, makes someone really lean and hard. But if you're saying what is a good drug to take while you're cutting,
yes,
I'll have to bring up Trenbolone again, because I think it is a very good one, because you don't hold any water on it.
Right.
You do get a lot of good fullness, and strength is pretty damn good too. So I'd have to say that is, if you're going to say what is the best cutting drug, I'll put that in there. But like I said, I want to preface that by saying I think it's a lot more to do with your diet than what compound you're taking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I mean, number one is always going to be, you know, what are you doing to get lean, you know, and that's going to be the diet and the cardio. The drugs, they're going to help to, like you said, it's going to give you a cosmetically harder look. It might help to move water around. You know, you're going to get more of the dramatic appeal that we all want by using that stuff. But flat out, I mean, I think you and I have both seen plenty of situations where somebody tells you, oh yeah, I'm running like a hard stack of Trendmasteron and Winstrol, and guess what? They're so fat that you would never know, you know?
Right, right.
So the drugs themselves, no, they're not going to cut you. I mean, I hate to be so agreeable, because it doesn't make for good radio.
Right.
But yeah, Tren is definitely a hell of a drug. I mean, it's so strong. It's not the first thing I would recommend to a new guy who's doing his first cutting cycle.
No, you know? I wouldn't either.
I mean, first and foremost, primarily, you got to have testosterone as your base. You know, we talked about doing a test cycle in the previous episode. And one of the other reasons I didn't mention about that in the previous episode is you want to run testosterone first, because in the future, all of your future cycle cycles are going to have testosterone in it as the base.
Right.
So you'll want to understand how testosterone acts in your body before you start throwing other compounds on top of it.
Right.
Now, down the road, you understand how the testosterone works. You've run a couple of hard bulkings. You cut a couple of times. And now you decide, hey, I'm going to do a contest. Then, yeah, if you were going to pick one compound, I would totally agree with you. Tren would be right up there.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, a few seconds back you had mentioned Masteron, and I guess I would give that an honorable mention.
Yeah.
But that's something also that obviously if you took and you had a lot of body fat, you really wouldn't notice much. But going back into the early 90s, I want to say maybe around 1990, actually Masteron, it came from France, but it wasn't called Masteron. It was called Permastrol.
Okay.
And then they stopped manufacturing that until – shit, a lot later, till when they had these underground labs come up with Masteron.
Okay.
And back then, everybody would say, oh, this Permastrol, man, it makes you like glassy hard. But see, the thing is, you know, once again, you have to be lean to see the effects of, you know, Permastrol, which is now called Masteron.
Yeah.
So, you know, there it goes back again, you know, stepping back to what we talked about before is the diet. You have to be lean enough.
No,
so,
I got a question.
You know, honorable mention to Masteron, which was formerly Permastrol.
I got a question for you. Did you ever have the opportunity of taking Permastrol from France?
No, I didn't.
No? Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah. Permastrol. Yep.
Isn't France where Parabolin, the original Tren, first came from too?
Yes. Yep. 76 milligram ampules.
Those French guys knew how to get shredded, huh?
Yeah.
They're getting diced over there.
Yeah, and back then in the, you know, like I said, in the early 90s, if you took 2 amps of Parabolin a week, which, you know, it's only 76 milligrams per amp, you were pretty much a stud.
Yeah, no kidding.
If you took 3, you were really crazy.
Now, that was the, I think it's the hexabenzyl carbonate. I'm missing
sort of blend.
Yeah. We'll call it Tren Hex.
So there's different lengths of the esters and stuff.
And so that's still available by some underground labs today. Mostly, though, you'll see either the long-acting Trenenanthate or you'll see the very fast-acting Trenacetate. I've also seen some Tren Suspension, which I would never, ever want to take that.
Oh.
That sounds scary, doesn't it?
I think I would definitely, for someone who hasn't taken Trenbolone, I would probably recommend them, if they're going to do it, start out with an acetate, just because if they don't like, you know, if there's any kind of side effects that they might get from that, then at least it's in and out of their system quickly and they can just stop it. And within a day or two, the effects are probably going to be gone.
Exactly.
But anthate, obviously, it's going to be in your system longer and you would suffer the side effects for a longer period of time.
I'm right there with you. I totally agree. You know, we had mentioned, like I said, in the last episode, we had talked about the long acting testosterone. You know, that's definitely a good starter testosterone, but the same scenario applies. It takes a while for those long esters to build up and for you to start to see the effect. But hey, if you don't like the effect and the side effects you're getting from it, it's also going to take a while for that effect to go away. So I'm right there with you. Trenacetate. And, you know, I try to keep the dose conservative. I would give it a try at 50 milligrams every other day would be my suggestion.
Well, I'd have to agree with that, that dosage schedule. I think that's plenty.
For sure. And, you know, from there, you should start to see effects within, you know, what, 2 to 3 weeks, would you agree?
With the acetate, I think that quickest, probably 2 weeks, but I'd say on average close to three.
Right on. Sounds like we're on the same page there. So let's shift gears a little bit. And another question that I hear very often is, how can I bring up a lagging body part? Now, this is kind of like a vague question, you know, how can I bring up a lagging body part? Because I think that what you would want to do would probably be different, A, in each body part, and B, with each individual. You know, there's probably a lot of reasons why a particular muscle group could be lagging. So we're going to kind of have to speak in generalities here, but let's just do the best that we can and hopefully give some advice that will apply across the board, maybe give some people ideas to try to work with.
Okay. You want to tackle this one first?
Okay. So, you know, the first thing I'm going to think about here is a lot of times people come to me and they say, hey, I need to grow, you know, fill in the blank, my back, my chest, legs. It's a real common one. Back and legs are usually the two that people have the most trouble with. The first thing they say to me is, should I add an extra training day? Should I hit that twice as many times a week as I do everything else? That's not necessarily, in my opinion, going to be the answer to start with, because in my opinion, the first thing I want to do is make sure that you're firing the muscle properly. Mm-hmm. I feel like in a lot of cases, if you have a weak muscle group, the reason that it's weak is because it's not contracting as well as the other muscles. So, you know, in a case like back, it might come down to, you know, lightening the weight and focusing more on the contraction, building a better mind-muscle connection, and then going from there. And something like that in itself could simply be the answer. Another suggestion would be, you know, look at what you're doing, okay? What's your rep range look like? Now, I can't tell you what the rep range needs to be, but there's a chance that it's something other than what you're doing now. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
Okay. And the other suggestion that I would have is, and this kind of ties back to, you know, getting the muscle to contract. I've seen in a lot of cases where you take a guy who has awesome traps and he needs to bring up his shoulders. Look at the muscle groups that are surrounding the weak muscle. I've seen guys that will do lateral raises and they pinch the weight up with every rep. And you can see when you look at their body, their traps are doing all the lifting. The delts aren't even hardly getting activated in this
exercise. Which tells us they're using too heavy of a weight for the laterals.
This is true. You know, so once again, lower the weight, but, you know, and then focus on that muscle, you know, that needs to, that could be the answer right there. If you have huge traps and you don't have shoulders, well, you're probably doing all your lateral raises with your traps. So those are my three thoughts. What do you got for us, Bill?
Okay. Well, I would say this, let's go over real quickly what you said. You want to make sure you're training the muscle properly first. So that, too, I would agree. That's where I would start with someone first. But let's assume,
okay,
that they're training the body part properly. Let's just say, you know, I went and I watched them train legs, and I'm like, okay, yeah, they're training properly. What I would suggest first, I would say, if you're training legs, if that's the body part that's lacking, and they are, let's say, let's just say for sake of argument, they are training it properly. The intensity's there. The varieties there, the rep ranges are right, and they're varying them. I would say if you're training at your legs every 7 days, why don't we try to do it every 8 days?
See, interesting.
What kind of results we get from that?
So you're and saying less back, often.
I would say, I would try less often at first. Maybe it's every 9 or 10 days that you need to train legs. Maybe that body part is taking longer than some of your other body parts to recover. Now, if that doesn't work, then maybe I could see saying, okay, we're going to do maybe 2 leg workouts in an 8-day period or 9-day period where one of them is more compound.
Okay.
Then you have a good amount of rest days in between your next leg session, and that one's going to be more of a pump workout. But I would start probably the reverse way first and maybe back it down to training legs every 8 days, maybe every 9 days, and going that route first just to see if that's something that's lagging. But I think that most of the time people aren't training that body part properly. Like you said, the muscle isn't firing properly. The contraction isn't there. And as simple as something like, you know, Shelby always talks about with and back, your elbows have to be in the right plane. Basically, when you're pulling the weight back, you know, depending on what a part of the back you're trying to train, the elbow has to travel in a certain plane. So maybe something, it's a real small fix, or maybe it's more of a recovery fix. So, or it could be a combination of both. So you have to experiment to see, you know, what is going to work for you. So there's a couple different ways you can attack it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I like that. What now, have you had experience working with somebody or in your own life where you've had to bring up a lagging body part? And if so, what body part was that?
Well, I'm just about to laugh because, yeah, my back is something I really worked hard on over this last offseason, and I was able to work out with you guys all year on back and just really learning how to move the weight.
Yeah.
First and foremost, and actually use my back instead of other body parts made a huge difference. And it's very noticeable to me and my coach. So, yeah, my back was definitely one of those things. And that's funny because it's just something that's real recent, you know, within this last year.
Oh, you definitely made some changes. That's for sure.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I've had the same scenario with back and same conclusion. You know, I started training with Shelby and that definitely helped big time.
Yeah.
Before that was legs, because I had, believe it or not, when I first started training, my legs were my most dominant body part, not just the calves, but my quads and my hams were far ahead everything else. I remember even before I had gotten serious into training, like just mountain biking for a whole summer, my legs would grow. They'd get bigger.
And
people would comment on it too. I'd have like veins running through them and stuff. So it wasn't just like minor. It was kind of noticeable. But then, you know, I got really serious into lifting and I ended up injuring my lower back pretty seriously. And I ended up stopping training altogether because I just, you know, I gave it some time. I couldn't move. It was like a low SI issue. And I basically couldn't move. And I would heal up a little bit and I would get back in the gym. And just when I was thinking I was feeling good, I would hurt it again. And that kept happening for like a year straight. And finally I said, screw it. And I quit lifting. I quit lifting for like 18 months. And I just decided I wasn't going to be able to do that anymore. Of course, eventually, you know, I couldn't stay away. So I got back into the gym and my first thought was, okay, you know, I started training again. I hurt my lower back and I said, screw it. I'm just going to be one of those guys that only has an upper body. Okay. I'm just going to train my upper body. Legs are going to suck. Fuck it. That's just the way it's got to be. I continued training a few months later. I decided, you know what? I'm having so much fun. I want to do a contest. But wait, to do a contest, I have to have legs.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, over time, I strengthened my lower back up to the point where I could squat again. But, you know, and I could work heavy. But the problem was, is now my legs were behind.
So, all right.
Yeah, it took me a while. In that case, I found it was a rep range issue. I had been trying to do like really heavy ass to grass squats and, you know, really heavy leg presses. But the problem was, is that what I really needed was more reps.
Ah, Okay, yeah. And then, like, you know, you kind of found what was that worked for you. You know, with someone else, obviously, could be different, you know?
Absolutely. I have found, and you tell me if you agree or not, I do find that, in general, legs do demand a little higher rep range than upper body. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think it's also important to have that variety in there. But I think, overall, I would have to agree if I – you know, if I had to make a decision either way, I think, yeah, they do respond a little better to higher reps, but you also have to have enough weight to have that stressor on the muscle to make it the demand for it to change as well.
Sure. Yeah. I could agree with that as well. So last question that we have here, more of a topic, I'm going to call it, because there's a few angles to cover, and I get the question often is, should I add GH to this cycle? So we're going to do like a real quick, we'll try to make this, you know, 5 minutes or so. We'll call it an intro to GH. Who should take it? When it should be applied? What to look for when you're buying growth hormone? And how much should you use? How to dose it? So let's go ahead and start from the top. You know, who would be a good candidate for somebody to begin using growth hormone?
Well, I'd say, obviously, you know, in bodybuilding, depending at what level you're at.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, a candidate would be – another question to ask would be, like, should you even take it? I'd say only if you've done regular anabolics for a pretty good amount of time, I'd say, and you have you've been bodybuilding for a good amount of time, 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer, and – then you want to maybe try something like that. That's one thing, but I don't necessarily think that everybody needs it. And I think that some people respond better to it than others.
Okay.
So I think for some people it just maybe adds a few percent, but for some people they seem to really make a big jump and they're hyper responders to it. So
yeah,
I think, you know, there's a lot of questions in there. It's not so cut and dry.
I could agree with that. I would say, just to make it real general, you know, who could use it? There, maybe a couple of different people. You've got your guys who have already made some good gains without it, you know, and maybe that's with having used anabolics, you know, anabolics on their own. A guy who is looking to then take it to that next level. So there's one person who could be interested. Other person who might want to give it a try is an older guy. You know, I mean, hormone replacement therapy, to go out and actually pay for like GH therapy, that can be really pricey. Like, we're talking thousands of dollars a month. So I actually have a few clients that are, you know, a little bit older, like at 45 into their 50s, that start up like a hormone replacement dose of growth hormone therapy. And they just do that on their own, you know, and they run a little bit of test with that, you know, or maybe they're already on HRT and they've got a pretty good program set up. So that would be like another candidate, like maybe either the advanced guy or the older guy or woman. Who's looking to, you know, just use it for rejuvenation purposes and, you know, get the most out of their training and out of life. Next is, when should this be applied? Like, would you do this in a bulking setting when you want to start using GH, or would you rather save that for a cut?
Okay. I would say it depends on your financial situation. As far as, let's apply it towards bodybuilding, I would say if you can afford to do it all year round, I think it would be best, because I think with growth hormone, it's better to take probably a lower dose, but take it for a longer period of time.
I agreed. Yeah.
But if you don't have those means, then I would say, you know, pre-contest is fine, you know, but yeah. I would say if you could afford to do it all year round, but just, you know, do a little bit lower of a dose off season, I would say that's probably the best route.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. You know, for the first time user, you know, you decide that you want to step your game up. The time that I would probably apply it would probably be for a cut. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like in general, you see some stuff online about how you know, growth hormone is like this secret key that, you know, all of a sudden your gains are going to go crazy. And like you said, there are those, you know, genetic outliers that this is true for. But for, I think, most people, you know, you're going to expect a little bit more muscle fullness, and you may get a little bit leaner than you would have been otherwise.
So I agree.
I find for me, the biggest benefit of growth hormone is to use it while I'm cutting. It helps me to stay fuller too. That's what I like about it. You know, no matter how hard I'm dieting, the growth helps me to stay a little bit rounder, keep a better pump in the gym. So I would probably personally, I would apply it first for your contest season. And then if you can afford, like you're saying, to continue using it, then sure, I'd definitely keep rolling, you know, year round. Next we had is what to look for when you're looking for some growth hormone. I mean, there's all sorts of GH out there nowadays. You can get anything from like really cheap generic blue tops to, you know, very expensive farm grade stuff from the US and Europe that can be quite pricey. Personally, my suggestion would be to, you know, take your time, look around, see what's available, and get the best quality GH that you can afford. This is a situation where you know, cheaper or better deal isn't necessarily going to give you better growth hormone. You know, don't skimp, you know, that's for sure. At the same time, you know, price-wise, the stuff that you get like from the US and US and European pharmacies, it's really expensive. So the middle ground, my suggestion would be like look at something like Hygitropin, because you could get what is considered to be Chinese pharmaceutical grade growth for a much more reasonable price. And from everything I've seen in the lab results, the stuff looks like it's pretty much on par. I mean, it's great quality. So, you know, take your time, do your due diligence, and make sure you get it from a good source like NAPS. And if you go with something like Hygie, I think that you're going to be happy that you spent a couple extra bucks.
Yeah, I would say the only thing I would have to add to that is really seek someone out with experience in those matters that you trust, and that's, you know, actually has experience, who's gone through that and who has tried it and is really up on it. And, you know, that's probably going to save you a lot of wasted time and wasted money as well.
Sure, sure. And then last, of course, is like how much to take and how often to take it. I mean, personally, I think the place to start would be at least 2 units a day. And for somebody, and I guess this is all going to be, you know, what are you looking for out of it? You know, hormone replacement therapy, you might even be able to get away with a little bit less than that. But I'd say somewhere ballpark 2 units a day to start. And you're going to see better overall quality of health from this, probably improved skin, improved nails, all that cosmetic stuff, improved hair, and possibly improved sleep. Some people get better sleep because of growth hormone. Those things are all going to be better. You'll probably experience a little bit better fat loss and potentially better muscle retention and pumps. From there, you could increase the dose, go up to 3 or 4 units, and you might start getting into some muscle building effect. Now, I've seen guys that have dosed it really high, like we're talking 10 units a day. Have you ever taken that much, Bill?
No. And I really haven't talked to anybody that's done, that's even dosed it that high. So I don't, I wouldn't know how to conversate about that. I really don't know. But what have you seen that people have taken as much as 10?
I mean, when you get up into doses like that, people are looking to make better muscle gains. And in that case, you know, this is always going to be coupled with anabolics and a lot of times insulin. You know, to get the most out of muscle gains with growth hormone, you got to add the insulin in too. That's a whole other conversation. It's not one we're going to get into tonight. You know, I've used high quality growth up to about like 8 units a day. And oh. And I personally didn't see much of a difference between 8 units and 5 units. And to tell you the truth, 5 units didn't really feel that much better than 4. So I feel like 4 to 6 units is probably about where I'm going to max out. And I like to run it every day too. If I were using 5 or 6 units, I would probably split that into 2 to 3 injections a day. That would be my thought, would be probably first thing in the morning. Then if I train around noon, right around, right before I work out, and then again, maybe 5 hours after that.
Yeah, I think that I've actually seen people run it as low as one unit a day in the off season. And then when it comes to pre-contest, they do between three and five. And most of those people usually take it before meal one, first thing in the morning.
There you go.
All in one dose. And I've seen a lot of good results off that. So, but, you know, obviously there's different methods and different schedules as far as dosing. But those are the two things that I've seen.
Nice. Yeah, I found that fat loss comes a little bit better for me if I tend to split the dose up. When I was taking like a higher dose, at first I was taking it all together right before training, and I just felt like that was just too much. It seemed, you know, because it was in and then it was out and it was gone. I felt like I was better off having more growth hormone throughout the day, you know, just trickled in. And that's the way I feel in general with peptides, are better to be trickled in than hammered in at one point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's our thoughts here, guys. And we've covered a few questions and had a really nice discussion. Bill, I kind of would like to have you back. Would you like to come back and do another episode?
Yeah, sure would.
All right, sweet. Well, we're going to work on trying to get some guests together. I think that everybody would like to hear somebody other than just me and you talking. So let's work on that. But I think that also, more importantly, I really want to get this Q&A hopping. So once you're seeing this episode, that means that the site's up, and that means that the Q&A is now available. So guys, go ahead and start submitting your questions. We're going to have this show come out, for starters, every other week. And by the time that this next episode comes out, I'm hoping to have an inbox full of questions that we can pick through, and we're going to try to get through just as many of them as we possibly can. Bill, I'm glad that you could be here with me tonight, and I'm looking forward to having you back again.
Oh, thanks, Scott. I enjoyed being here. Thanks for inviting me.
Awesome, man. Well, you guys have a good night. Thank you for listening to Advices Radio, and I will see you soon. Good night, guys.